Morning is text number 23, which is on the board. They kindly repeat this after me. Totmatara, smiling with little teeth coming out.
Smiling with little teeth coming out.
Of their mouths.
Of their mouths.
They were more and more attractive.
They were more and more attractive.
Yayatu.
Yayatu.
And enjoy.
And enjoy.
Pramodam.
Pramodam.
Transcendental bliss.
Transcendental bliss.
Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki
Jai.
Dressed with muddy earth mixed with cow dung and cow urine, the babies looked very beautiful. And when they went to their mothers, both Yashoda and Rohini picked them up with great affection, embraced them, and allowed them to suck the milk flowing from their breasts. While sucking the breast, the babies smiled, and their small teeth were visible. The mothers, upon seeing those beautiful teeth, enjoyed great transcendental bliss. Report. As the mothers cared for their respective babies, by the arrangement of Yoga Maya, the babies thought, here is my mother. And the mothers thought, here is my son. Because of affection, milk naturally flowed from the mother's breasts, and the babies drank it. When the mothers saw small teeth coming in, they would count them and be happy. And when the babies saw their mothers allowing them to drink their breast milk, the babies also felt transcendental pleasure. And this transcendental affection continued between Rohini and Balaram and Yashoda and Krishna. They all enjoyed transcendental bliss. So the verse once more reads, Tan matara nija sutta purunaya snuvantyam pankanga raga ruchira upabhiya durbhyam tatvastanam pravivadosmanukam niriksha mugdasmitalpadashanam yayatu pramodam. Please repeat the translation after me. Dressed with muddy earth.
Dressed with muddy earth.
Mixed with cow dung and cow urine.
Mixed with cow dung and cow urine.
The babies looked very beautiful.
The babies looked very beautiful.
And when they went to their mothers.
And when they went to their mothers.
Both Yashoda and Rohini.
Both Yashoda and Rohini.
Picked them up with great affection.
Picked them up with great affection.
Embraced them.
Embraced them.
And allowed them to suck the milk.
And allowed them to suck the milk.
Flowing from their breasts.
Flowing from their breasts.
While sucking the breast.
While sucking the breast.
The baby smiled.
The baby smiled.
And their small teeth were visible.
And their small teeth were visible.
Their mothers.
Their mothers.
Upon seeing those beautiful teeth.
Upon seeing those beautiful teeth.
Enjoyed great transcendental bliss.
Enjoyed great transcendental bliss.
Mukam kuru nivachalam pangamanayate vinyam tripatanam mante shreem guru nivyam padanam. So in this very sweet verse describing the Vatsalya exchanges between baby Krishna and Balaram and their mothers, Rohini and Yashoda, it would not seem that we could derive much of a philosophical import on which we could base a whole class, but actually of course it is not up to us to establish any philosophical import. That is done in the Guru Parampara. So the original Acharya of our disciplic succession, Lord Brahma, has given a very nice philosophical observation on these pastimes of Sri Krishna, these intimate, loving, sweet pastimes. And Lord Brahma has said, yasyavatara guna karma vidambanani namani ashu vigame namani ashu vigame vivasva rinanti te naikita janma shamalam sahasaiva hitva samyani abhavrita amrita tad ajam prapadye. So he's offering his obeisances. Tam ajam prapadye. He's offering his obeisances under the Supreme Lord who is unborn, Ajah. He is unborn, although he may appear, as we are reading today, as the child, the beloved child of Mother Yashoda. Still, he is known to the enlightened spiritual masters of this disciplic succession as being the original Adi Purusham, original person who is Ajah, who is never born. So, the Lord Brahma says, Yasyavatara guna karma vidambanani. So the word vidambanani means very mysterious. The avatar, when he descends, the Lord appears in this world, displays his guna, his qualities, karma, his activities. That is actually very, very mysterious. It is not to be taken in some superficial, surface way. So these pastimes are not to be taken simply in a mundane way. That just as we see in this material world, so many mothers have their babies and they're suckling them, that this is the same thing. No. The Lord Brahma goes on to explain that if one chants the holy name of the Lord. Now, as Prabhupada explains, the names of the Lord, they arise out of his pastimes. So in this particular verse, we are reminded of the holy names Yashoda Nandana and Rohini Nanda. Here we see how Krishna and Balaram give pleasure to their pure devotees in the Vatsalya mood, Yashoda and Rohini. So they are the source of all pleasure for these devotees. Therefore, Rohini Nandana, Yashoda Nandana. So if we remember the holy names of the Lord, we chant these holy names of the Lord, which arise from his various pastimes. At the time of death, namani ye asu vigame. So asu means this life, vigame means to go. When one goes from this life, vivasva granamti. If one chants the holy name of the Lord, even inadvertently, and of course we have the example of Ajamir, inadvertently, even without a really conscious appreciation for the holy name of Krishna and his pastimes, he just happened to chant the name of Narayan. Then Lord Brahma says, Te Naiketa Janma Shamalam Sohasai Vihitva. Te Naika Janma Shamalam. So, Janma means this birth. We have taken this birth in this material world not just once, but uncountable times. And so Janma Shamalam means sum total. Sum total of all the sinful reactions we have earned. Just like in English and in other European languages, we have this word sum, means a total, added up. So in every language there's some word, this German summa, I suppose in Swedish there's some word, it's like sum. Summa, okay. So from Sanskrit, shamalam. So janma shamalam, you add up all those births that we have had in this material world. Just imagine the enormous stock of karma that must be there. Great, great mountain of sinful reactions, both so-called auspicious or inauspicious, pious or impious, but actually all are sinful because all are materialistic. So, Genaika Janma Shamalam Sahasaiva Hitma. So certainly, without a doubt, this whole stock of karma from all of our births in this material world will be instantly, sahasaiva hitva means instantly removed, just by remembering, just by calling out the holy name of the Lord, which arises from the Lord's pastimes. And then what will one attain? So samyani avrita omrita. Sanyani apavrita, yes, apavrita amrita. Samyani apavrita amrita. So, samyani means to attain. Apavrita means open, or unlocked. And amrita means amrit, nectar, bliss. So, this remembrance of the Lord, by way of His holy name, at the time of death, this unlocks the key to unlimited happiness. Because by remembering the name, holy name, form, pastimes of Krishna, one becomes qualified to enter these pastimes of Krishna, which are described here as being the reservoir of unlimited transcendental bliss for His devotees. So, now, yasyavata gunakama vidambanani, the appearance and activities and qualities of Krishna's displayed forms, avatar forms in this material world, are very, very mysterious. Just like when King Shalva was attacking Dwarka with his great airplane given to him by the demon Maya, and Lord Krishna came forth with the army of the Jaru dynasty, and he and his soldiers smashed the army of Shalva, and they were causing much trouble for Shalva in his airplane. Shalva, although he had such a wonderful airplane, he was always getting caught in showers of arrows from Lord Krishna's bow, so he was very much distressed. So as demons will do when the tide of battle, the tide of events seem to go against them, then they resort to their favorite policy of cheating, trickery, dishonest, stab in the back tactics. So Shalva, by his mystic power, he generated, first of all, a Brahmana. Now why a Brahmana? Because a Brahmana always speaks the truth, at least in those days. It was understood that whatever a Brahmana says will be true. So a Brahmana appeared on the war field, and the Brahmana was crying. The Brahmana was delivering a message to Lord Krishna. Apparently the Brahmana was he was supposed to be coming from Dwarka, and he was delivering a very sad tidings to Lord Krishna, that the evil Shalva has somehow entered Dwarka and kidnapped your father Vasudeva. And then Krishna, he showed the quality of grief. As soon as he heard this, then it could be seen. The demigods, of course, they're observing these pastimes. So the demigods were surprised to see Krishna's face register grief and distress. And then Krishna began to lament. He was saying, how is it possible? I left Lord Balaram in charge of Dwarka. He was protecting Dwarka with his mighty arms. No one can get past my brother Balaram because he's the Supreme Lord. So how is it possible that this Shalva could enter Dwarka city and kidnap my father? Surely the ways of providence are very mysterious. So Krishna was lamenting like an ordinary person. It's like we may have some plan in life, and the plan is thwarted by events over which we have no control. So we may lament like this. Oh, the plan of providence is insurmountable. I tried my best, I did everything I could, but still I am defeated. So Krishna expressed the same sort of lamentation as one hears from ordinary conditioned souls. And then Shalva, he appeared before Krishna with a man under his captivity, a man in chains, which resembled Vasudeva exactly. And Shalva proclaimed, Krishna, here is your father Vasudeva, who has begotten you and by whose mercy you are living. Now if you have any strength, let me try and stop me from killing him within your very sight. And then Shalva took out his sword and he cut the head off of this Vasudeva. And then Krishna, he practically had a breakdown on the battlefield. He was very grief-stricken and he was lamenting like anything. And then a moment later he just composed himself and said, all right, now we've had enough of this nonsense. Now we will kill him. And so Shalva and his airplane were destroyed. So Srila Prabhupada in the Krishna book, in his narration, points out that the great authorities who are conversant with Lord Krishna's pastimes and their deep significance, there is a controversy between the great authorities about this particular pastime. They're offering different points of view to help us understand why Sri Krishna was showing this guna and karma of seemingly ordinary lamentation. To the point it is very mysterious. The Lord's pastimes are very, very mysterious imitations. Lord Brahma uses this term in the translation. Srila Prabhupada says this vidambanani means very mysterious imitations of the activities of conditioned souls. And similarly, here is the Lord and his primary expansion, Lord Krishna and Balaram, both equally powerful personality, unlimitedly powerful, a personality of Godhead, who are the enjoyers of all the sacrifices offered from all over the universes by perfect brahmanas and great sages and demigods. They're offering yajna, they're offering mantra. And so Sri Krishna and Balaram are the enjoyers of these sacrifices, and they are the proprietors of all planetary systems everywhere in all universes, and they are the indwelling friend, the indwelling super soul, guide, reservoir of intelligence of all living entities everywhere. So this Supreme Lord is described here as sitting on the lap of his mother, and he's smeared with mud, cow dung, and urine. And he's very hungrily and very happy to drink the milk from the breast of his mother. And his mother is looking into his mouth and seeing little teeth growing. And she's becoming very happy, just like mothers do. They look in their little child's mouth, and Prabhupada so nicely points out, they count the teeth. And counting the little teeth coming in, they feel very happy. So again, the acharyas, the great commentators on the Srimad Bhagavatam, they're explaining to us, they're having to explain in different ways, why the Lord, who is Swarat, who is independent, who needs nothing from anyone, why has he placed himself in this position? Because the child is completely dependent on the mother for everything. Child is helpless. So here is Krishna, the Supreme Lord, from whose body in his Mahavishnu form all the universes are coming out. And there he is, sitting very happily upon Mother Yashoda's lap, drinking milk from her breast, completely dependent upon her. So this, of course, the explanations are there by the different acharyas, but certainly this is very, very mysterious. And it causes our brains to become puzzled. So then what is the difference? This is the immediate question that comes up. Is there a difference? Because, of course, Mayavadis, they're quick to jump in with their explanation. And Krishna's, he's an ordinary person like you and me. Just that by dint of his karma or whatever, they'll have some off-the-wall explanation. By dint of whatever, the impersonal Brahman manifested through him. But otherwise, he's no different from the rest of us. He had to sit on his mother's lap and drink her breast milk, otherwise he would have perished. So they say that Krishna and his activities are motivated by the same physical and emotional needs as any conditioned soul. But no, Lord Brahma, who is the giver of Vedic knowledge to everyone, including the Mayavadis, they take the Vedas from him too. So Lord Brahma has said, pointing out the clear distinction, Namani te namani re asu vigame vivasa rinanti. So if we remember the holy name of the Lord, Yashoda Nanda, which is arising from this very pastime, at the time of our death, then Tenaika Janma Shamalam Sahasai Vidhitva, then we will become free of all sinful reactions. And Shamyani Apavrita Amrita, then we will attain that ocean of transcendental bliss of Sri Krishna's pastimes. So if the Mayavadis, their position is Krishna is an ordinary conditioned soul like the rest of us, then if that is true, then why cannot we attain the same freedom or same liberation from all sinful reactions and entrance into the spiritual world, into direct association of Krishna? Why can't we attain this by remembering the pastimes of Mrs. Jones and her little kid, Doobie, or any ordinary conditioned soul, if it's on the same platform? Obviously there must be a difference. And this is, again, it is most mysterious, because generally it is understood by people that this motherly, mother-to-child relationship, it is actually the source of all ills in the world. I remember when we were producing B.Assist many years ago, we used to have one, what was it called, in Rampenlicht, this one column with all sorts of funny news from around the world. I remember in one issue, we put in an article about one strange fellow from California who was making a spoof, a satire of this, in the modern days, all the different products and practically everything that's coming out and has a warning label on it, warning that there's some danger. Just like, of course, cigarettes are there. Now, in fact, there's someone who's producing death cigarettes. They have a skull and crossbones right on the, that's the logo of the cigarette. And he advertises, death cigarettes will kill you faster. And he's actually making big money. His cigarettes are selling very well. Anyway, so this has become a common thing that any new product will have some, even some electronic iGEM camera tape recorder will have some warning, look out for electrical charge, don't open the case because we'll get a shock. Like this, everything has some warning label. So this person, he had formed some sort of institute or society for putting labels on everything. And he was proposing, well, there was a whole list of insane things. For instance, bananas should have a label. Beware that you might slip on the peel and break the peel. But one thing mentioned in that article is he said that there should also be a warning about motherhood, because that is a cause of all other problems that come later. So just taking birth from a mother's womb, that is the original source of distress. So, yes, and that is a fact for the conditioned souls. There's a famous, well-known story from the Buddhist tradition about one woman named Gotami, Kisa Gotami, which means frail or feeble Gotami, because she was a sickly woman and she had a very unhappy life. So all through her existence, she was simply suffering. But she finally, she got a husband, and then she got pregnant from the husband, but then her husband died, so that was another distress. But finally she had a son, and then she found what she thought was happiness in this son. Generally in the material world, that's the end goal of a woman's life, just to have a baby in her arms, and she's happy. And well, what else is happening in the world? When the baby is there, she's happy. So this Kisa Gotami was like that. She finally had her little son, and she could, the same, give her breast milk to him, and look in his mouth and see the teeth coming. And this way she was feeling happy. She was very content. And she was totally absorbed in the childhood pastimes of her son. But then, suddenly without warning, the baby died. So this was too much for her. Actually, her mind snapped. She became mad. So much suffering in her life, and then finally the baby came, she was happy, and then the baby died. So then she was going around carrying the dead son from house to house. And she would knock on the door, and people would come to the door, and they would see this frail, pitiful woman, and she would go down on her knees, and she would be crying, and she would hold out the son and say, "Do you have medicine that will bring my son back to life?" And the people felt so mortified to see this. Such a pathetic scene. No one knew what to do for her. So she was going from door to door begging like this, "Do you have medicine to bring my son back to life?" So finally, one wise person said, "Well, I can't help you, but there is one great sage who is giving lectures nearby. His name is the Buddha. So if anyone in this world can help you, he can. So go see him." So Lord Buddha was sitting on his, what they call the Buddha Asana. It's like in Vaishnava tradition, there's Vyasasana. So there's Buddha Asana. The Asana of the Buddha. They still have this in the Buddhist temples. So he was sitting on the Asana of the Buddha and he was giving a class. And Kisa Gotami appeared on the edge of the crowd. And she was mad, so she just interrupted the class. "Oh, exalted one, can you give me medicine that will bring my poor, beloved son back to life?" And Lord Buddha said, "Yes, no problem. You just please bring me a handful of mustard seeds that you begged from a house where no one has got it." So then, very happily, with great hope, she started going from door to door, and she was asking, "Can you give me some mustard seeds?" And the people said, "Oh, yes." They were very happy. Now they could do something for her. "Oh, you just want mustard seeds. No problem." But then she said, "But one condition is there, that in this house, no one should have died." And then immediately the householder stopped and said, "Well, I'm sorry. Last year my grandmother died, or last month our sister died, or 2 years ago, like this." Everybody had a story of death in their house. So she practically went to every house, I believe this happened, I forget, but anyway, some city. So she practically went to every house in the city. And then she finally came back to Lord Buddha. And when Lord Buddha saw her, he said, "So, Gotami, have you brought the mustard seeds?" And Gotami said, "Let's forget about the mustard seeds. You have come to this world to teach us how to get free of birth and death. Now that is my only desire, because I have seen that everywhere there is death. what to speak of my little boy, but everyone is dying and I will also die. So I recognize that this is the real problem. So in this way, being confronted with this ever-present reality of our material existence, that our janma, our birth, and our karma will end sooner or later with death. So she gave up all hope. She gave up all hope for happiness in this material world, as a woman is very wont to do, happiness from having children. She completely renounced it. This is useless. So I'm telling this story just to illustrate that when one becomes philosophical, seeing the miseries of this world, then that's the tendency, to give up any hope in any sort of personal relationship that is to be understood as the source of all misery. And yet here we are reading that the Vatsalya Rasa, relationship between Krishna and Mother Yashoda, or Balaram and Mother Rohini, is Apavrita Amrita. It is opening up the ocean of transcendental bliss. So this is very, very mysterious. Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Janma Karma Chame Divyam Evam Yogiti Chakvata Chakvata. Contact with the modes of nature. In this material world, the Janma and Karma of the conditioned souls. We say conditioned souls. So what does that mean? Condition. It means specifically conditioned by the Triguna, by the three modes of material nature. Now, what does that mean precisely, to be conditioned by the three modes of material nature? It means simply that in three different ways, the conditioned souls are trying to enjoy the results of their activities. Because, now this is an important point, because those activities that they're engaged in do not yield any bliss. The door to bliss, the lock to bliss is locked up. So there is a superficial resemblance between the all blissful activities of Krishna and the activities of this material world. Superficial, external, in superficial form. But there's a great difference in substance. And at the end, you may see here in the material world so many babies being nursed by happy mothers. But actually there's no bliss in this activity at all. This is just another form of suffering with a smile painted on it, that's all. And there's only the hope for happiness. You see, they're trying to enjoy the result, trying to squeeze out some bliss, some happiness from these activities in different ways, by mental speculation, by adjustment, by arrangement. Hoping, you see, that when I get entangled in this affair with this child, that some happiness will come out. Now this is also a problem. The child is screaming all night, passing stool all over me, getting sick, and I have to worry about it. But in the future, the child may grow up and become doctor and lawyer. When I'm old, the child may take care of me. So like this is always, the promise of bliss is always being put sometime in the future, until the time of death. And death comes and there's no more chance. Alright, this life is over. And because we invested our whole consciousness in this future hope, then yes, you get another birth, another hope. But the hope is never fulfilled. So this is the meaning of being conditioned by the three modes of nature. This is going on, this pursuing the future hope of bliss in three conditions of life, which are compared to gold, silver, and iron. But in any case, these are gold, silver, iron shackles. There's a story Śrīla Bhaktisiddhānta Sarasvati used to tell of a son of a king, in other words, a prince. And he had a dear friend who was the son of his father's mantri, or minister. And then the two of them were befriended with the son of the king's treasurer. So these three sons, they were intimate friends. they shared everything in their life. They always, whatever, what one was doing, the other two were doing with him. So one time, the three of them, they were young men, so they went on a journey just to see the world. And then they came to one kingdom where there was also a king, a minister, and a treasurer, each of whom had a daughter, beautiful daughter, and they were also fast friends. Now it happened, so happened in that kingdom that the king, his minister, and the treasurer were away. They were on some state mission somewhere else. So the three handsome young men came into the his neighboring kingdom, and they visited the royal palace, and they happened to see the three beautiful daughters of the king, the minister, and the treasurer of that kingdom. Mm-hmm. And by seeing, then they became attracted. The three became attracted to the other three. And the relationship began. They fell in love. And then they decided, well, this seems to be, you know, this is a heaven-sent match. You see, we're three male friends with our fathers, our king, minister, and treasurer, and here are three girlfriends, and they have the same fathers of the same station, and the prince is attracted to the princess, the minister's son is attracted to the minister's daughter, treasurer's son attracted to treasurer. So it's perfect. So then they thought, why should we wait for the common, the usual arrangements between the parents, the families, for marriage? Well, let's just get married immediately. So they had what is known in India as a love marriage, which in the West is just marriage, normal thing. Boy meets girl, and they get married of their own choice. But in India, that's considered very, well, it's only for low-class people, actually. Very low-class people do not follow the Varnashram system. So, but they did, they took this step, they just got married. So, then after some days, the king of that kingdom and his minister and the treasurer came back, and they entered their palace, and what did they find? They fell intimately with these strange young men. And so this was an outrage. So the king immediately called for the guards. Arrest these strange men. And so the daughters, they began to cry and weep, and they were coming before their fathers on their knees and falling on their feet. Please, this is my husband. We're in love. We got married. Please don't arrest him. And then, but the fathers, they were outraged. So they investigated, and they found out the station of these young men. So then the king, very sarcastically, he said, all right, I will show respect for you three according to your station, one being a prince, one being minister's son, and one being treasurer's son. When I shackle you in my dungeon, the prince will get a gold shackle. The minister's son will get a silver shackle. And the treasurer's son will get an iron shackle. So in this way, they were chained up inside the prison. And they had to rot. That's the end of the story. I don't know if they ever got up. So this is the point that we may by karma, by some very auspicious combination of the modes of nature, we may have activities in this world which have seemed very wonderful, very splendid, evoking all sweet emotions, true love, see, true happiness, security in this world. We may have these appearances in our life, but they're only superficial. There's actually nothing blissful about them all. Rather, it is just a shackle of mind. Maybe a gold shackle. Maybe it looks very nice. But you're shackled nonetheless. Birth after birth after birth. And that is all because, you see, the principle is because we're persistently squeezing this material energy, trying to find the bliss in, and hoping that in the future, if I just get myself nice and entangled, nice and shackled up by these wonderful gold shackles, then later on, some bliss will come to me. But it never comes. Once you get shackled, that's the end of the story. Like this story. There's no sequel. You don't find that there's a later chapter. You're just shackled up. No happy end. Now, Krishna's pastimes are Ananda Chinmaya Rasa. They are direct manifestations of the blissful spiritual potency. Now, Srila Prabhupada, in the Krishna book, in the chapter which describes a visit, this is the chapter, I believe, called Killing the Keshi Demon and the Demon Vyomasura. There's one chapter. So in the latter part of this chapter, after these demons are killed, Narada Muni comes to Vrindavan and meets Lord Krishna. And Narada Muni prophesizes the later pastimes of Krishna. Because this point in Krishna's pastimes are a junction. Just after that, Bhakura will come. We've been reading this in the last few days in the Hare Krishna Center every evening. So Akura comes, and he's sent by King Kamsa to bring Krishna to Mathura. So then the Lord's Mathura pastimes commence. So this is an important junction. So Narada Muni, he prophesizes the Mathura and Dwarka pastimes. So now in this particular section, Srila Prabhupada points out in his narrative commentary that although Krishna takes his birth in this world and displays activities, such as these activities being the son of Mother Yashoda or being the friend of Arjuna and so on, he's partaking in personal emotional relationships with his devotees. Srila Prabhupada points out that although this is going on, Krishna is not obliged to enjoy the results of these activities. That's a very important point. Whereas in this material world, you see, in material consciousness, as I said, conditioned consciousness means that whatever we're doing is under the modes of nature. So being under the modes of nature, just try and understand this point, it's actually very simple. It means automatically that you are obliged to enjoy the results, either in mode of goodness, passion, and ignorance. But you cannot work in this material world, in material consciousness, without seeking to enjoy the results, seeking some pleasure, some bliss. Because, of course, that's what the soul wants. The soul, by his nature, needs bliss. So the soul, under Maya, is thinking, these activities, they must give me bliss. But they're not giving me bliss now, so let me keep working, let me keep struggling, let me get the result in the future. So Krishna's pastimes are not like that. There's no future result coming. They just are blissful. They are themselves the eternal manifestations of transcendental ecstasy shared between the Lord and his devotees. There's nothing else that has to be added. There's nothing that we have to wait for. You see, whatever Krishna is doing, yeah? You see, like the mothers are becoming happy seeing the little teeth coming in. So it's not that they have to wait long that the teeth fully grow in, or that the teeth fall out and the second teeth come in, or finally the false teeth are put in. These are not those kinds of teeth which have cavities which give us pain. You know, when a child's teeth are growing in, it's very painful. Child cries. You probably all remember when you were kids. Remember growing pains? As the body was stretching, the bones were growing, you feel aches and pains in the bones. Don't remember that. Oh. But anyway, I used to have these paintings, and my mother said, these are growing pains. Everybody gets them. Anyway, the growth of the body is painful, that's for sure. So we, all we see in the material world is some promise of happiness in these events. But there is no actual happiness. But in all of Krishna's activities, Ananda Chinmayasa, they're always blissful. And whatever Krishna is doing, whatever pastime, whatever stage of pastime, they are unlimitedly blissful. Apavrita amrita. They open the unlimited ocean of transcendental bliss. And so the devotees, they just, through these pastimes, they dive into that ocean. Yeah. So any, you know, Srila Prabhupada, for instance, it just comes to my mind, so I'll mention it. Srila Prabhupada was very, very displeased when in Los Angeles there was this club that appeared among some devotees that became known as the Gopi Baba Club. So they had some philosophy, this is a form of neo-Sahajya philosophy. So the philosophy was that it is the Madhura Lila specifically where all the bliss is, Krishna's pastime for the gopis. And everything else is just, you know, for neophytes, it's just for beginners, it's not the real thing. And they would even say things like, you know, wow, when I read Bhagavad Gita, it puts me in Maya. So they would only read the just like Prabhupada said, they would go straight to 10th canto, to Rasa Lila. They would only read Rasa Lila descriptions from Krishna book and Chaitanya Charitamrita. And everything else that was, you know, that it was just some other platform, not the blissful platform. And Prabhupada became so angry. And he said, these rascals are saying that there is a difference between Mother Yashoda and the gopis. They do not understand transcendence. They are bringing in their mundane vision. You see, in the mundane vision, we have this view of gradation and rank, and that it's the more high up you are, the better it is. So climb up there. Just like in ISKCON institution, like the ashram of sannyas, this seemed to be the topmost. So there has been, in the past, it's been seen for those who wanted to climb up there, get that done now. And then a few years later, well, anyway, we don't have to go into that. The thunder is leaning against the wall. And the teeth are coming in the little baby's mouth. So this is the mundane vision, motivated. Actually, this is the desire to become God. So, that is absent from Krishna's pastime. Whatever Krishna does, this pastime, being a little son of Yashoda, or dancing with the gopis, or herding the cows, or playing with his boyfriends, they're equally blissful. This is unlocking the unlimited ocean of bliss. It is just, the difference is only the matter of the particular flavor of devotion of his devotees. Because there are devotees who want to enjoy the Madhura Rasa or the Vatsali Rasa. Therefore, for them, Krishna is manifesting all these unlimited pastimes. This is Krishna's love for his devotees. That he makes these arrangements that they can intimately participate with him in these wonderful exchanges. So, Ananda Chinmaya Rasa, Matayamanak Su. The Lord's pastimes are Ananda Chinmaya Rasa, full of all bliss. But to enter them, the mind must be pure. The mind must be completely pure. If Pranam Pratipalam Smarvatamo Pekti, when the mind becomes so pure, then we can remember Krishna's pastimes. That remembrance means we remember our own position in these pastimes. You remember your identity within Krishna's pastimes. And at that point, one crosses over the forms and features of this material world, which are just perverted reflections of Krishna's pastimes. When we see, just like when I'm in airports, I'm flying somewhere, and then there's always in these airports the magazine shops, and outside the shops the magazines are in prominent display. And one sees the covers, they try to make the covers as attractive as possible. And there will be some woman's magazine, Good Housekeeping or something, and you'll see mother and daughter, or mother and child on the cover. See a beautiful looking mother and her little baby, and both are smiling. It seems so attractive, you see, when you see this on the magazine rack. You know, you look again, you walk by, and you can't help but look again. It seems so attractive, but then you remember, but this is just an insignificant reflection of Krishna's pastimes with Mother Yashoda. Just imagine how attractive that must be. Because this is just perverted, insignificant, atomic reflection. And it is so attractive. So, we give up the slightest shade of attraction to these activities in the material world. Once the mind becomes pure and immerses itself in the original pastimes of Krishna, the original mother-to-son relationship, or lover-to-lover relationship, or friend-to-friend relationship, the Leela of Krishna then carries one over, this Tribhuvana, the three worlds of material existence, back home, back to God. So I will stop here. Are there any questions?
Yeah. I remember I read the first film of it. Srila Prabhupada said about Krishna, childhood has, that they are the young of the earth, and they are the prototype of his original pastimes in Guru Prabhupada. What does that mean?
The prototype, you want to know the meaning of this phrase, the prototype?
Yeah, but I mean, prototype means something, some model or original model, but what does it mean?
Yes. Krishna's Kishora pastimes, Kishora Shekhara, his childhood pastimes. Kishora means a little older child. It is said that by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to Sanatana Goswami that it's the Kishora Shekhara pastimes are the original. Of course, we're using these terms, and it's sort of inconceivable what this means, original. But we can put it this way: they're the most beloved pastimes of the Lord and His devotees. So, Krishna Himself, the original personality of Godhead, is said to never leave Vrindavan. And in Vrindavan, His pastimes consist of childhood activities, in which he's the son of Nanda and Yashoda, coming home every evening from herding the cows and playing with his friends. He's taking dinner, which is very anxiously, attentively served up by Mother Yashoda, and she's observing that he's eating very nicely, telling him to eat more. And then in the evening, he sits with his father and the older cowherd friends, and the father and the older cowherd men are having discussions about cow raising, cow protection, and the growing of crops, just as men will do. They talk about their occupations and the problems, and Krishna, he sits between them, and all the men are appreciating Krishna's beauty, and they're patting Krishna on the head, and Krishna is pleasing them in different ways. And then Krishna takes Mother Yashoda, Pushkar, rushes him off to bed. You see, now it's time for you to take rest. So Krishna goes in his room and closes the door. And then he listens for a while. And then he jumps out the window. He goes into the forest and meets the gopis, Srimati Radharani, and dances with them. So this is the central, the sinosure, the central focus of all pastimes. All other pastimes in Goloka Vrindavan are accessory pastimes, you might say, to these pastimes. And of course then the pastimes of Mathura and Dwarka and then the Vaikuntha Leela, these are all performed by expansions of the original Kishore Shekhar Krishna. So that's the best answer I can give you. Any other questions?
I actually heard once Mara saying that actually crying of the baby and so that is the actual answer. It is,
I'm supposed to make a comment. Let us just say that there are different qualities of ecstasy. Actually, Shastra says that this crying of the baby is a manifestation of the sins of the parents. So, if someone thinks that's ecstasy, well, good for you. Yeah.
You also said that Krishna is in the spiritual state is always in the form of 16 years old youthful man. And, but I wonder, you know, how the pastimes that are manifested on this earth planet, like these childhood pastimes, like how they are reflecting the reality of the spiritual world and how they are manifested there.
Well, I was explaining to the Madhavatabhu that in the spiritual world there is the sense of original pastime, Kishore Shekhara. Not exactly 16, younger than that, a little younger. Krishna is adolescent. 16 is already older than adolescent. So at adolescence, when a boy or a girl, we see in the material world, when they reach age 12, 13, like that, then they become especially very attractive, very beautiful. It's a kind of an in-between childhood and youth. And so the beauty of the child is still there, and the beauty of youth, young adulthood, is also coming in. So the mixture is very, very pleasing. So this is said to be the original pastime of Krishna. Now what original means, if it just means it is the center of all bliss in Goloka. There are other pastimes, eternal pastimes. Krishna as Bala Krishna, baby Krishna, that pastime is going on there eternally. But the central focus of all of bliss is this Kishore Shekhara pastime. So here when Krishna appears in his avatar, displaying his lila in Bauma Vrindavan, then he's actually his pastimes are like previews, what they call in the cinema world, trailers or previews. When they show when a film is going to come, they'll show for some weeks before the film actually arrives some advertising in the cinema, and there'll be short clips of the various scenes. And you'll see in short code form the whole film. You see? Of course, you won't. They keep it suspenseful. You don't know how it's going to end, but they show the best action scenes, and little segments, the best parts of the love scenes, and so on. And everyone gets very agitated to see this film. So Krishna's All the Vrindavan pastimes are like that. Krishna is showing little clips, film and clips of his various eternal pastimes, just to make us very interested in seeing the whole production of the spiritual world. So for that we have to get our ticket. Which is pure bhakti. Krishna prema. Anything else? Yes?
How important is that such a world is accused for not being professional to be part of the individual instead of people suffering so much and they should realize that. On the other hand, devotees are also supposed to look true for the suffering to not to take part, and it seems that devotees have to take part in the suffering to the people in the future.
Well, this may disturb the sentiments of foolish people when we say that material life is simply full of suffering. And as Prabhupada would say, therefore, if it is just suffering, then it is intelligent to get free of it. You see, sometimes they accuse the devotees of escapism. Now you're withdrawing into your temple. Of course, this is completely ridiculous. But anyway, they say like this, you're withdrawing into your monastic lifestyle and escaping from the real problems of life. But what's wrong with that? Your house is on fire. Don't you escape from it? What do you just stay there? You know? Stay in the middle of the fire and be a realist or something. My house is burning. I won't leave. Actually, there's a story. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati used to tell. There are two lazy fellows, extremely lazy fellows. And they lived together in one room, in a house. And so, one night they were sleeping. Actually, they generally only slept. But it just happened to be a winter's night. And the house caught on fire. So, the whole room was in flames. All the walls were in flames. So, one of the two, the fire had come very close to his bed. And so he felt burning on his back. So, a little more motivated because the burning was increasing. So then he finally said, you know, I think the sun must be up. And I think you must have left the window open because the sunshine is coming in very hot and burning my back. Why don't you check and see if you left the window open? Then the other fellow said, how can I do that? How can I open my eyes? Come on, just forget about it. So then they both roasted to death. Now this is a very good depiction of material consciousness. These fallen conditioned souls are simply so lazy, so slothful, living inside this body. And the distresses are coming, the burning of Maya is coming. And they're simply too lazy and slothful to really do anything about it. Just like the problems of life, they discuss them, but their measures are all half-hearted. You see? The measures are all half-hearted. Nobody really wants to get to the root of the problems of life, because that means cut off material attachment altogether. Nobody wants that. Just like in another strike. Mood of telling stories. So, the story of a boy named Amar. So Amar, in Bengali language, is a name, but it also means I, or myself. Amar means myself. So it's referring to all of us, all souls in this world. So Amar had a very terrible boil on his back. It was so painful he couldn't do anything. He was just laying in bed. And all of his relatives and friends were gathered around him out of great compassion, great concern. So his mother and his sisters, the women folk of the family, being very sentimentally compassionate for Amar, they all had hand fans. And they were fanning the boil. And mother was blowing on it to make it feel better. Myself. Amar means myself. So it's referring to all of us, all souls in this world. So Amar had a very terrible boil on his back. So painful he couldn't do anything. He was just laying in bed. And all of his relatives and friends were gathered around him out of great compassion, great concern. So his mother and his sisters, the women folk of the family, being very sentimentally compassionate for Amar, They all had hand fans. When they were fanning the boil, and Mother was blowing on it to make it feel better. You know, this, you probably heard this expression, to blow on a boil. This is a common, so it comes from this story. So the mother and sisters were blowing and fanning the boil. And what was that doing for Amar? Nothing. He was in intense pain. So, anyway, there's more to the story, but I'm just focusing on this point. So maybe another time I'll finish it. Anyway, so... So this is, so the mother and sisters, they represent the material sentimental relationships. So we suffer in this material world, everybody knows it. We're all suffering, but our near and dear ones, those who are connected with this body in familial relationships, yes, they want to, you know, help us in our suffering condition, but what is that help? It's like blowing on the boil. Just kind words. Oh, how are you feeling? Oh, I've got cancer. I'm very dry. Oh, well, here, have some soup. Let me put another pillow under your head. You see? Oh, I think I'm going to die. Oh, my poor son. Oh, blah, blah, blah. That's all it is. It's just blah, blah. That's all they can hear. And if one wants to come with a real solution, let's cut off all this sentimental mushiness. Get out of the bodily concept of life, come to the spiritual platform, become devotees of Krishna. Then immediately, you're killing your mother. You're killing your mother. Now, mother, you're dying anyway. Sometimes I should tell this story that Ganadhar Maharaj told me. It's a long story, it's too long to tell. It's such a fantastic story about family attachment. And joining Hare Krishna movement. Please tell me. I should tell. Okay. You know, you're laughing in the chips. Such a wild story. So Dalila Maharaj grew up in New York. And he's born in a Jewish family, and Jewish families are especially known, especially New York Jewish families, being very, very attached, very tight, tightly attached. Especially mother and son. This is extreme. Mothers are so protective of their sons in these kinds of families. So Dhanadhar Maharaj was a good student. In school, he earned a degree, BA degree, and his parents were very proud of him. But along the way, he developed strong interest in Krishna consciousness. After having read Prabhupada's books and gone to the temple, again and again, he decided, I must become a devotee. So, but then he knew that if I become a devotee here in New York, I'll have no end of trouble for my parents because they're so attached to me. So then he thought, oh, I'll just leave. So on some excuse, he went to Texas and he joined the Dallas temple. So there was a Gurukul. There's still a Gurukul there. It used to be the main Gurukul of ISKCON in Dallas at that time. And because of his education, he became a teacher there. So for 2 years, he was very happily engaged as Gurukul teacher. And he informed his parents by mail he had become a devotee. So one day, while he was sitting alone in the prasadam room, somehow or other, just worked out by providence that he was sitting alone, and he had been doing some work. So he was not dressed in a dhoti. He was wearing some overalls, you know, these kind of, you know what I mean, overalls, work overalls. And because this is the Hare Krishna movement, nobody really cares about these things, they were very oversized overalls. And it just so happened this for some special work he was dressed in this way, and he stopped to take some prasad. And then suddenly he saw his father. His father was at the door to the prasadam room, knocking desperately on the glass. So he got up and he opened the door. Father, what are you doing here all the way from New York? And then the father said, oh, I just came to see you, but I'm sick. Because his father had some health problems.
So then his father was holding his heart and saying, "Oh, I'm sick. I'm just coming here from the airport. No, I've gotten very sick. You've got to come with me, son. Take me to the doctor. Look, my car is just outside." So then Dhanadhar Maharaj was very concerned, so he went with his father to the car and drove him. And actually the strange thing, yeah, he noticed something strange. His father was driving, not that he was driving. He thought this was strange. Father, I could drive. No, it's all right. And then he was telling his father, "Look, there's a drugstore right there. We can stop and get some medicine." But the father just drove on. And then Dhanadhar was saying, "Where are you taking me?" And then suddenly father stopped and on the one side street, and there was a car parked there, and from out of the car came an uncle whom Dhanadhar Maharaj knew as a demon, who was very much against his joining the Hare Krishna movement, and then this big heavy fellow. And then they both got in the car on either side of Dhanadhar Maharaj. They suddenly just jumped in, and it was deprogramming time. And they took him to some motel, and it turned out that this big fellow, his nickname was Goose. So, because he's from Canada, and Canada's known for their wild geese, or their, so this big guy was called Goose. And he was an employee of Ted Patrick. So then Ted Patrick showed up himself in person, and the deprogramming started. So they tied up Dhanadhar Maharaj in a chair. That time he's Brahmachar. So they tied him up in a chair, and then they would make him hear tapes of blasphemy of Krishna consciousness and read strange articles about ISKCON, supposedly exposing what's really going on, and so many other things. And then when he would try to chant, he would try to chant under his breath, like this, so they wouldn't notice it. But Ted Patrick was always watching. And when he would see this, he would shout, "He's going into trance! He's going into trance!" And then Goose would come and give him a kick, because he would kick the back of the chair. "Stop that! Boom, boom, boom!" And then he would stop. So anyway, there's a lot of details. I won't go into all the details. They're also interesting, but we have to shorten this somehow. So anyway, this deprogramming went on. But Dhanadhar Maharaj, very intelligently, actually, he said Super Soul helped him. Super Soul unfolded a whole plan, because he prayed very sincerely. So Super Soul helped him within one day to convince Ted Patrick and Goose that he was snapping out of it. They have this term, snapping, in the deprogramming world. So then he asked them, because his father had left and gone back to New York. The deprogramming was being done there in some neighborhood in Texas. So he said, "Look, I got to see my parents. I've got to, you know, repair my relationship with them." But now the reason he was saying like this is that he didn't know Dallas very well, but New York he knew. He knew his way around. So there would be a much better chance of escape. So then they brought him to New York. They were very encouraged. Okay, he's coming out of it already. This is very good. And they took him to his parents' home. And then Ted Patrick left, because it seemed like the heavy part was over already. But Goose was there, just to look over things, make sure that, you know, within a few days, they would be eating hamburgers, and, you know, doing all the normal karmic things, and that means he's really deprogrammed. So, and then when he was at home, he told his father, because he was still wearing these weird overalls, and they had given him, to keep warm, some American high school jackets, you know, with the big letter here and the plastic sleeves. And then for a hat, he had this sort of, from somewhere they got this really strange, like a Cossack hat, you know, this big bird hat. This is the way he'd been dressed, you know, on the airplane and at home. So he told his father, you know, when he got home, "Look, this is ridiculous. See how, you know, I'm your son and I'm dressed in this way." And his father said, "All right, we'll go to the shopping mall and I'll get you a nice new clothes." And, you know, Dhanadhar Maharaj was thinking, then I'll make my escape. But Goose came alone. So they were going through the shopping mall, and he's, you know, dressed in his oversized overalls, wearing a high school jacket with leather and a cross on that.
Everyone was kind of looking.
And then father bought him, I believe, an overcoat. That was the first thing. He bought him an overcoat and gave it to Dhanam Raj in a bag. And then at that point, Goose, you know, he was in the shopping. He saw some things he wanted to buy too, but he had only Canadian money. So he said, look, I just go to the bank and change my money. But Goose is already thinking that everything's all right, so I can just go. So he went to change the money. And then Dhanam Raj, at that moment, zing, he just ran. And then his father, you know, his father was trying to run after him, hey, come back! But then his father tripped and fell and split his pants open. So Dhanam Raj, he made it to the door, but his father was shouting, stop him, stop him, stop him! And people saw this strange fellow. Who thought he was a thief, who thought he had stolen something from the father. And so he was caught by shoppers. Like Dhanam Maharaj says, in New York, people get killed on the street and everyone just walks by. But on this day, everyone was a good citizen. But then the Dhanam Maharaj, you know, Goose was there, the father was there, there was a big commotion. Dhanam Maharaj kept shouting, call the police, call the police, call the police. So the police came. And then the police were interviewing, and they found out that Dhanadhar was 26 years old. So they said to the father, you can't keep him. He's 26 years old. And then the father said, but he's been brainwashed by a cult, by a dangerous cult. And then so then the policeman said, well, look, all we can do is we can take you all down to the Kings County General Hospital, to the psychiatric ward. And there's a doctor there who can run a test on your son. And if he's found to be actually crazy, not of mental competence, then he can be legally placed in your custody. But unless that's done, you have no right to keep him. It's actually kidnapping. So then the police, they took Dhanagar down, followed by the father in his car with Goose. And the father called the mother too, so the mother came by taxi. She showed up at the hospital too. So there was a big scene in the hospital. Dhanadhar Maharaj was placed in the observation ward, this glass-tin room. And there was a, he said there was a guy in a wheelchair who was just sitting in the wheelchair just cursing. And then there was a woman who was just looking at the wall and talking all the time. And so anyway, because he was behind on his rounds, so he started to walk back and forth, chaining his rounds on his fingers. Remember, he's wearing this outlandish costume, etc. He's walking back and forth, hiding his eyes. And the doctor, his name was Dr. Cone. Dr. Cohn came, and he was looking, you know, through the glass, the whole scene. And then he went to talk to the parents. So then the parents, they also didn't give a very good impression of themselves. They started crying and shouting. So then Dr. Cohn was taking notes. Strange family. So then he called in Dhanadhar Maharaj. And then the first question he asked him is, are you hallucinating? Then Dhanadhar Maharaj said, his reply was, no, I'm not hallucinating. But that does not mean that I'm seeing everything the same way you are. Because I am a devotee of Krishna, so I see everything as Krishna's energy, meant only for the Lord's service. I do not see this material world with an exploitative outlook. I am not engaging my senses and sense objects for the purpose of sense gratification, only for service to Krishna. So although I am not hallucinating, that does not necessarily mean that we are seeing this world in the same way, you and I. And the psychiatrist, he was astonished. He said, well, that's very intelligent. Then he said, well, there's nothing wrong with you. He said, between you and me, I think your parents are great. So he said, I'm gonna write you a clean bill of health. You're all right. You just go. So then he wrote out this report, and then he told they came out to the parents with Dhanadhar Maharaj and informed them. He said, your son is in perfectly good mental health. He's a very intelligent young man. I don't know what this is all about, and this is just, you're just wasting my time. So then the parents, they just went into the fifth gear. Completely mad. The mother was just screaming and crying, you're killing your father! You're killing your father! And then the father said, we're gonna have the rabbi say Shiva for you. The Shiva is a kind of prayer, which is the rabbi says when the son dies. In other words, they're saying, you're not our son anymore. So this is in Jewish family, this is a very, very heavy thing to say. So then anyway, Dhanadhar Maharaj, he just said, no, I'm going to the temple. So he called the temple and told them, this was the first time he could get on the phone, so he called New York Temple and told them everything was going on. And then the devotee said, don't worry, we're sending some devotees down right away. So he waited in the lobby, and he noticed that his mother and father and Goose were in the car outside. They were just waiting for him to come out. And he knew they would try to grab him again. Goose was there. So then the devotees showed up with the car, and two devotees came out. Very, very heavy looking. There was a devotee named Gopeshwar, whom I know, and Dr. Nick. So Gopeshwar had a long, full-length coat, you see. And Dr. Nick, he had big muscles. Gopeshwar is also very big. And so they both came in, looking very heavy. And then Dhanadhar Maharaj said to them, look, maybe we should go out that way and run into the car from the backside and leave quickly, because, you see, there's my father and mother and Goose in the program. They're right out front just waiting for us to come out. And Gopeshwar, he said, we'll go out the front. And then he opened up his coat. And he saw inside the coat, there was nunchaku, there was brass knuckles, there was club. He had everything. So then they went out the front, and just as soon as they came out, the Dhanadhar Maharaj's father's Cadillac came roaring up with all the lights on, the four headlights shining on bright. The doors opened, and Goose jumped out, the father jumped out, the mother jumped out, and they started straight for Dhanadhar, and then and Gopeshwar got in the way. He got nose to nose with Goose, licking each other and cursing. Mother and father, they were grabbing Dhanadhar, and Dr. Nick was trying to get them off. And then the hospital police came out. Such a big commotion. The guards of the hospital came out. And they didn't know what was going on there. So naturally, they listened to the father more than anyone, because he looked like a respectable person driving a Cadillac. So the father said, I've come to take my son home. He's just come out of the hospital, been examined by the psychiatrist, and I'm taking him home. And then the Dhanadhar was telling the guards, I don't want to go home with him. I'm going to the Hare Krishna temple. And then the guard said, look, they started to push Dhanadhar to the car. Look, you go home with your father. You see, you're his son. He's going to take you home. Go home with him. And so it looked, and Dhanadhar Maharaj's heart began to sink. Oh, no, after all this, I'm being forced back into the clutches of the deprogrammers. Then just at that moment, Dr. Cone came running up with his white jacket and his, you know, his, he had in his hand his clipboard with papers. He came running out and he started shouting at those guards, "Stop immediately! Stop immediately! You don't understand! You don't understand!" The guards were, they were shocked. And he just came running up and he pointed at Dhanagar Maharshi and he said, "He's not crazy! He's perfectly sane! Let him go wherever he wants!" Then he turned and pointed at the parents, "But they are crazy! Bring them inside!" So the guards grabbed him and dragged him into the nut house. So, this is a very good testimony. Dr. Cone has affirmed of the Kings County General Hospital that actually a devotee of the Lord, to, in answer to your question, who is detached from material affection, who is aloof, and is seeing the world as Krishna's energy and not as a place for sense gratification, that he is actually sane. And those who are attached and all their emotions are all submerged in physical relationships, material relationships, Dr. Cone said they are insane. So next time someone brings up this point, you can tell this story. A psychiatrist, a trained psychiatrist, has actually declared the attitude of devotees is sane. The attitude of their attached relatives who want to drag them back into sentimental relationships, they are mad. Yeah. So we're going to stop here. All right.